This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
We're going to start this evening with a little listen in a civics lesson on state politics. Hang on. What you're going to find out is a lot of what you got told in school about our electoral process isn't quite right. Background, the state of Arizona, the legislature is divided into 30 districts. In each district, you get to elect one senator and two representatives. Now, everybody says vote for the person, not the party. But here are some facts in Arizona. There are 27 of the 30 districts where one party has an advantage of 6% or more. 11 of those districts have a Democratic-loaded district, 6% or more. 16 have Republican loads. So there's 27 districts that elect 24 senators and 54 representatives. These districts total, then, elect 81 out of the 90 seats in the Arizona legislature. Let's take a little closer look at these districts. There are 11 Democratic districts, as I said, that are 6% or more Democratic. Those elect 11 senators and 22 representatives. So 33 electeds are elected from those 11 districts. All 33 are Democrats. There are 16 districts on the other side that are Republican by 6% or more. They elect 16 senators and 32 representatives. So 48 people are elected from these districts. Of these 48 people, 47 are Republicans and one is a Democrat. So these districts altogether elect 81 out of the 90 seats in the Arizona legislature. 80 of the 81 elect the candidate from whichever party happens to have the majority in that district. Now, we like to think we vote for the candidate, but these figures suggest otherwise. So, who's the one person? The one exception is elected from a Central Phoenix district that has 8% more Republicans than Democrats. The one Democrat is Representative Kelly Butler, and she is our first guest. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
By the way, just to fill out the thing, I've told you about 27 out of 30 districts. In the other three districts where the margin is less than 5% one way or the other, who do we elect? Four Democrats and five Republicans. So if the party registration is close, you get a mixed result. You look at that and say, well, really, three out of 30 districts have some form of normal democracy, at least in terms of result. But back to Kelly. So, Wonder Woman, how did you pull that off?
Oh, my gosh. Well, when you put it that way, it does sound like a really big task.
It's an unusual occurrence.
It is.
That's the context that I was trying to create.
And you did. And, you know, it's unfortunate that that's an unusual occurrence. And I'm a native Arizonan. I actually grew up in my district. So part of it is I know my district very well. I know, and people know me. And I've been involved in my kids' schools and in my community for so many years. And part of it is really, I call it heart and hard work, because we knock on so many doors. We take these issues to people's doorsteps. I mean, I've had great conversations with people across the political spectrum about, you know, I stand at their door and I ask, what's important to you? And we talk about how, you know, my values, you know, would kind of align with theirs. And I think when you have those conversations with people, they realize that it's not as partisan as it seems, if you're, you know, and that these are bigger decisions to make when you're voting. And it's not just voting for the D or the R. It's really voting for the person who's willing to do the hard work. And, you know, a lot of times I'll disagree with people and they might disagree with me, but we have a great conversation. And in the last election cycle, I gave away my cell phone number. I had business cards with my cell phone. I still have that cell phone, didn't change my number. And, you know, I want people to know that I'm reachable and I will have a debate and a discussion about anything that they're interested in talking about. And oftentimes we find a lot of common ground. So I think it's just talking to people and it's just trying to understand, you know, what other people care about.
Put that in perspective. How many votes did you get in the last election?
You don't remember
the number?
I'm not the wonky number person. I know that I came in first.
And I do remember that. That's with three candidates.
I think it was between 2,000 and 3,000 votes, which is a total generality. I'll tell you what. I mean, we worked so hard up to Election Day. I won and I moved on and got to busy working, and I didn't spend a whole lot of time on the numbers.
Ballpark it, I think it was in the neighborhood of 30,000 votes. And that was a prefatory question. I'm surprised. I thought you would know the exact number.
I spend a lot of time on, you know, policy and people and not so much on that stuff.
30,000 votes, margin of 3,000. How many voters would you estimate in your district that you've talked to personally?
They told me I personally knocked on 8,000 doors myself in the last election cycle.
Wow.
So, and over a decade, I've been knocking doors in my district for a decade for other candidates and other causes. And I'll go up to people's houses and remember conversations that I had years ago about their kids and their schools. And it's just, you know, it feels like a very small community to me because I've just been knocking those doors for years.
Now, how many of those folks have called your cell phone?
Not that many. You'd think they would. I told everybody, stick this on your refrigerator because when I get elected, you might want to call me.
I think there's a natural in it. And that's a good thing because you couldn't handle 8,000 calls.
Probably not.
Did the most recent Redfor ad business, did that provoke any calls?
Oh, my gosh. I'm still having trouble keeping up with all of the questions and comments. I mean, I was getting messages on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, on my personal email and on my cell phone. It was so interesting to see people that had not before been engaged in the process and hadn't seen kind of the details of how things worked would ask me, why is this happening? What's going on? And, you know, because they were there at the Capitol, but they wanted more information about, you know, the process and what was happening. So I was furiously trying to get back to everybody and, you know, explain. Yeah, I introduced an amendment and, you know, it was to cap class sizes at 25, and teachers were so excited about the prospect of doing that. And I think they were disappointed and shocked on budget night. It was, of course, the middle of the night when.
But they were there.
They were there in the gallery, and they were outside.
This is usually done middle of the night in secret after the press time is, you know, it's after the deadline for the newspaper.
Yeah, there was no secret down at the Capitol during the budget process this time. There was a lot of eyes on that process, and that was a great thing.
So tell us a little on your end. I'd love to hear because we've had teachers in here who were in the gallery. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're the first actual legislator that has been in here since then. Tell us what it felt like.
You know, it was unbelievable to see. Not only were they in the gallery and in the hearing rooms, they were outside. They had candlelight vigils. At one point, we were in the Appropriations Committee meeting, and we could hear the Redfor Ed band playing. They were playing
"We
Will Rock You."
They were. I listened to a lot of the clips. They were a good band. Of course, then I said, "Wait a minute, who did I have as a high school musician?" Those were professional musicians. That's who teaches music.
Oh, were music teachers.
Which means basically your average music teacher is a professional level musician.
They were amazing. And but we could hear that inside the building. And there were hearing rooms were full, and we could hear them cheering when, you know, a good comment was made in committee hearing, which I'm sure has never happened before. But during the middle of the night, we were discussing the education piece of the budget. I think it was basically from midnight to 2 a.m. And my colleagues and I were introducing amendments, and we were trying to debate, and we were fighting as hard as we could. And then after the budget passed, some of them cleared out. Some of the Redfor Ed people cleared out, and it wasn't as full. Some stayed all night long, but
It was after the budget. There was a series of amendments. That was before the budget passed, though, right?
Correct.
Series of amendments that I think the eye opener for a lot of people. Most of those amendments were by Democrats, and they were foreordained to go down. And it appeared not to get listened to. And I think a lot of the teachers were shocked that wasn't their image of the democratic process.
It's very disappointing. It's disappointing to me. It's disappointing to teachers who were like, hey, these were great ideas. Why wasn't there a better, you know, why weren't they considered? And it is. It's just part of the process. You know, the majority party gets their votes they don't consider other ideas.
I think the other thing that would be a shock, probably was a shock to most of them. You didn't even get to see the budget ahead of time, did you? I mean, when it was being worked out.
Oh, gosh, no. We get it in a kind of, you know, final form and in a a couple of days before, but there's still footnotes and amendments that we don't see until we're really on the floor, you know, reading through it. And it is shocking. And it's actually very horrifying as a legislator to try, you know, to do our best to understand what are all these decisions that we're making when we're given this information last minute.
Okay, we will be back with Kelly Butler and a surprise mystery guest when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, our mystery guest, as promised, Chad Campbell, former state senator, Democrat, one-time minority leader. And as we have observed in this show earlier, that meant that he was in charge of, as we once put it, approximately nothing. So were you down at the legislature? Any of this was going on?
What do you mean in terms of what? You mean the
Red for Ed, the whole
thing?
Oh,
yeah, I was watching it from the outside, yeah, basically, yeah. Yes.
Anything like you ever saw when you were in the legislature?
No.
What years were you there?
2007 to 2014, basically. So
you're now a consultant, so you're not hardly out of the game.
I mean, the biggest thing that would approximate closest to what we saw was probably the year we did Medicaid expansion when I worked with Governor Brewer on that. In terms of, you know, really trying to work a deal that wasn't necessarily appealing to the majority of the Republicans, but we didn't have the thousands of people storming the legislature. And the only other one too would be, I guess, Senate Bill 1070. When that happened, we had marches, we had protesters. So that was a similar situation.
I don't think the numbers were anything like
this. No, they weren't. I saw that
picture. The choice of red was good, too, because it was dramatic. And when you saw the picture of the crowd that went all the way down Washington Street, the aerial, and filled the Capitol, I said, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I think you'd have to go back to Vietnam-era protests and... Even then, it wasn't so combustive immediate. That was 10 years. So there wasn't this had a focal point, had a beginning. And the interesting question is, I don't think it's going to have an end. I see this as potentially transformative. I would like your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, I'll let Kelly answer this too, but I hope that a lot of the Red for Ed supporters get out there and engage in supporting candidates and elected officials who are pro public education. I think that's the best use of their time and their energy this cycle, because we can go back and forth about policy all day long, go back and forth about what ballot measure to run every year. But the real difference maker is electing a new legislature, and that's where the energy should really be focused.
Now, I look back in the history in this state, and the Republicans have been in control of the House of Representatives further back than I've seen records. There was one year, it was about the year 2000, when the Senate was a tie, and so there was shared power. Do you see any prospect for even a tie? Either of you?
I'm saying absolutely. I mean, you know, this Red for Ed movement really, really, I think, demonstrated to people that the tie is necessary for our state. And I think that it was obvious that good ideas aren't being introduced. Good ideas are on both sides of the aisle, but we're not hearing from anyone. You know, I've got great bills that I introduced that are still in my drawer. And I talked to people about that and about the progress we could be making if we had a different makeup at the legislature. So I think people are ready to stop looking at the D's and the R's and to think about the balance that is needed. And, you know, and we're working hard in districts like mine that are swing districts to make sure that we are, you know, really encouraging people to think bigger than just our district, bigger than individuals, and to think about what is the balance that we need to achieve.
Other than a tied house, I want to ask you both, and Chad in particular, having been in leadership, do you see, I mean, the process, this majority of a majority, which means that if you've got 26 Republicans in one branch, and that's a majority, okay, that they're not moving anything out of there unless 14 of them. Now, that could be 14 out of 30. Or I got my numbers wrong. But if you have 60% of the House and you need 30% you need 31% to 29% of your own caucus can hold things up.
Yeah.
even though that's a minority of the entire legislature. In effect, Kelly here, as a Democrat, your vote doesn't count because the key vote is in the caucus. If it doesn't get through the caucus, it doesn't get. I mean, that, isn't there?
That's how it works oftentimes, unfortunately.
Most of the time, isn't it?
Yeah, most of the time. And that's not unique to Arizona. I would point out that's true for any chamber.
Oh, and the Democrats do that when they're in control of California. This is equal opportunity.
But I would say, just going back to the earlier question, though, too, I do think that there's a good chance to flip the Senate this year. I think the Democrats can take the majority. I think that the Democrats can pick up several seats in the House. And I think the other thing is, too, we focused on education so much the past few weeks, but there's a broader set of issues that we have problems around here in Arizona. State agencies are being run horribly. Education is just one symptom of a bigger problem. And I think a lot of voters are waking up to the fact that there may be a time for a leadership change in here in the state.
Absolutely. I'm hearing that from doors in my district. People are ready for some better ideas. And you know, I got to put in a plug. I'm running with Christine Marsh, who is the 2016 Teacher of the Year. She's running for the state Senate. And, you know, she's
in your district.
In my district. Oh, yeah.
Given the red for red, that's an interesting qualification.
It's an outstanding qualification. And she's been involved for years like I have, knocking doors, learning all the issues. And it's an opportunity to really change our state if we can change the balance of power and we can have a competition of ideas. And I'm looking forward to that. We're looking forward to knocking a lot of doors this time.
Okay. We'll be back in a moment with Representative Kelly Butler and former State Senator Chad Campbell talking politics, red for red, and the like in the state of Arizona in the Think Tank on KTAR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back with Chad Campbell, a former legislative leader, and Kelly Butler. I said to myself, you know, I hear Kelly, and I'm going to say Kelly Ward some point.
I've knocked on doors.
Politics are not the same.
Yeah, and there were some people mistaking me for Kelly Townsend, too. Kelly Butler.
Oh, yeah, well, Kelly Townsend to Kelly Ward. Now, that wouldn't be so far off. But
I get some interesting tweets.
Anyway, the thing you share in common is that you're both Democrats. You are in the minority party, are past or present, in the minority party in a legislature that is completely controlled by the other side. And my question to both of you is, given that and given rules like the majority of the majority, which means, let me explain that one, generally speaking, with an occasional exception, fairly rare exception, nothing happens in legislation unless a majority of Republicans want to do it. That's not so you could have something that a majority of the legislature clearly wants, but not a majority of the Republicans, and there, because of the caucus rules, nothing happens. So in my question to both of you is, in that environment, with those rules, how do you get things done? What can you do?
Well, I guess I'll start with it is frustrating. It's frustrating and disappointing because we're not getting the things done that I know that people want us to do. But what we are able to do is fight back against really bad ideas and try to make people aware of what, you know, the nuances of some legislation that they may not know enough about. And just to bring those things up on the floor, to we owe it to our constituents to have a really good debate and to try to bring up, you know, the flaws in legislation and to hold the majority party accountable for, you know, some of the things that they're doing, and also to try to introduce better ideas and to show the contrast in what we could be doing.
How often do amendments get taken seriously when they come out of the Democratic side?
Almost never. The word hostile amendment. If you introduce an amendment, the first thing that the majority party wants to know, well, is this a hostile amendment?
Which means it had a D next to it?
Yes. Most often. It just means that the sponsor doesn't like your idea. And, you know, and so then it's deemed hostile and it's pretty much dead on arrival. But occasionally, especially in committee, you know, it's possible to maybe sincerely work. I mean, in committee is when you're sincerely looking at an issue, trying to figure out if it's a good thing to be doing.
In committee, you're sitting at the same table with a group of people.
Well, yes, except for example, I'm on banking and insurance, where there are 5 Republican men and 3 Democratic women. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible to do, our bills don't get introduced, our amendments don't get on in that environment ever.
Yeah. That seems to me, from the stuff that I have heard, was one of the more shocking things to the teachers who were in the gallery as they watched a series of amendments being proposed like yours that seemed to them to make a certain amount of sense.
Absolutely. Those are the good ideas that we needed to have debates around, and we were not having those debates.
And the anecdotal observation that I've heard made by teachers was it wasn't just that it got voted down. He said it was obvious disinterest on the part of the majority party. This was just something that whatever it was, we weren't going to listen. It was just going down.
And they're absolutely right. That is exactly
so
what happened.
The appearances were true.
Oh, completely. And I'm glad that they were there to see it. I think it was disappointing to them, and it should be. And we need to do better.
Yeah. And I would add, I mean, part of the role of the minority party is to, again, expose what the majority is trying to do or what they're opposing. So a lot of times you propose an amendment simply to get a vote on record against something from the majority party. That's what you're going to do. That's your entire intention. And sometimes you get creative, too, and try to offer amendments that kind of expose the ridiculousness of a particular bill or an idea and force a debate on the floor about the kind of absurdity of an idea. And, and one that came to mind to me, when I was down there, we had a debate one day coming up about a border militia bill that was being proposed by the GOP. If you guys remember the border militia bill that was proposed every single year.
And what would it do?
It created a militia, basically, to guard
volunteers,
guard the border, yep, between
Lord.
Arizona and Mexico.
Good Lord. Nothing. What could go wrong there,
What could go
right?
wrong there? Well, and it gets better. This one, though, this particular one that year, actually was going to be led by a commander who actually had to have no qualifications whatsoever, no background in law enforcement, military, nothing. They were appointed by the governor without any other approval and had no requirements. So when that bill was coming up on the floor, I had my staff draft an amendment that day that would require that commander to wear a hat that said commander and a cape that said commander 24/7 all the time. So everybody in the state knew he or she was the commander. When the Republicans saw that amendment being drafted, they pulled that bill from the schedule that day, and it never came up again. So sometimes you have to get a little creative.
Capture the imagination.
Yeah, but to Kelly's point, the role of the minority party is holding the majority party accountable, and I think trying to force a conversation about ideas and policies that probably the majority party sometimes doesn't actually want to discuss.
Well, and just to speak to the amendment process, there was a bill that I had studied last time, and we needed to do a cleanup and this year, and so I offered an amendment, and the bill sponsor wouldn't allow my amendment to get on because of the D after my name. And so even though it was a good solution, it had to be offered by someone with an R. And so then the amendment got on.
So you got somebody on the other side to,
Yes, so somebody, and that is, it's just absurd that it would matter.
Because at least in a case like that, you got it on.
Absolutely. It fixed the problem, but it delayed the process by several weeks. And it was just a dumb hoop that didn't need to be jumped through.
Common, though. It's very common.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. Happens all the time.
It's just silly and disappointing.
Your border militia story reminded me. Do you remember the first time? It was really, I think, the first incident where Joe Arpaio was involved at all in this process. And there was a militia, self-appointed militia guy who, quote unquote, arrested somebody out in the desert.
Yep.
And Joe arrested the militia guy.
Oh, yeah.
That was before he figured
before he,
was,
before he flipped. Yeah. Yeah. People forget about Arpaio's original stance on immigration. Very different than how he ended up towards the end of his career.
His career. It reminded me, there was an experiment that was done once in a college, and they told the professor, or they told the students, that the subject of the experiment was actually the professor. He was ignorant of what was going on. They told the students that the closer to the front of the stage the professor got, the more attention you should pay to them. Okay, and if he walked back away from the front, you should start, doing other stuff, looking at papers, just ignoring him. By the end of the lecture, they had him at the front of the stage, teetering with his body so far forward that he was at risk of falling off the stage. And I see the analogy, you know, he figured out something that worked, that got a lot of support, and went that way over time.
Good analogy for politics, right?
So how important are key people to work with? I'm thinking of, and we may have to continue this in the next session. But, you know, there's the folks that seems to me you get to work with are it's fairly predictable. I mean, in the Senate, you got Kate Brophy McGee and Bob Worsley, who are people who are amenable to argument. By the way, right after Memorial Day, we're doing a show with the two of them. That's the kind of that we will have in this room almost nearly the entire Republican moderate faction of the legislature. But how important? I mean, it does seem to be just a small handful of people who are in more like the Republican center, what's left of it.
Well, I think that small handful of people isn't always reliable on every issue. And so, more important than trying to convince a couple of people would be trying to balance the state with a different makeup down at the legislature. And, you know, I'm tired of people saying, well, you know, what's happened under the leadership that we currently have? And what we have is, you know, among the lowest paid teachers, and that's not getting fixed by this bill. What we have is, you know, poorly, horribly funded schools and a crisis on our hands. And so to say that there are a few people that are, you know, on the other side of the aisle isn't enough for me. We need to have a balance and better ideas, because we're still, until we have that balance, we can't rely on a couple of moderates. We need to have a different majority so that we can have a competition of ideas.
We'll pick up that thought after the break. I got to say, among other things, you mentioned that, you know, the little bit of extra funding that has gone to the schools. And of course, the legislature can't and shouldn't directly legislate teachers' salaries. I have some real sympathies for the position right now, some of the school boards and school administrators that got this additional funds. And then they're looking out at a budget and they say, you know, we've got air conditioning that needs to be fixed. We have other things. Now, the spirit of this bill was absolutely, I mean, everybody understood this was about teacher raises. But when you actually get the money in hand, and not to pilfer it completely, but, you know, at the margins, I would cut some slack to an individual school board if they said there's just a couple of other things where it's absolutely, absolutely, you know, we got a leak in a roof, or we don't have enough functioning school buses, or something, or you know, your history book ends at Ronald Reagan. Anyway, we will pick up that thought, and we will do a wrap on this when we come back in the think tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, I do want to bring you up to date. Last week, we did our first ever Think Tank Hall of Shame Awards to Kelly Townsend and Maria Sims. We did offer a rebuttal time to each. I just want to report to you, no takers. Offer still good. If you want to hear what that is all about on KTAR.com, you can go there and click on podcast, scroll down to the Think Tank, and it was the beginning of the show from May 6th. It is available on podcast, can be played on any computer. So, in that regard, older shows are at MikeO'Neill.org, and my Twitter is Michael J. O'Neill, O-N-E-I-L. So we were talking about education. Chad Campbell, education funding, you had some general observations.
Yeah, just generally speaking, part of the problem with this session and the final plan that Governor Ducey proposed, to the point you're making earlier, is the fact that the state really can't set teacher pay. This is a locally controlled issue. And really, I think that Governor Ducey sidetracked this conversation into teacher pay so much that we've lost the general conversation about education funding as a whole. And that's really what we need to be talking about here. Teacher pay is obviously critical, but funding education as a whole is the bigger picture issue here in Arizona. And that just, I think, has got lost in the shuffle in a lot of ways.
And I think, just to explain to people, while this was put in as a, quote, teacher pay, the legislature can't, and I would argue, should not.
They should not, I agree.
Because you have, I mean, and especially to a conservative who believes that the best government is the most local. Well, the most local form of government you have is your local school board.
Exactly.
And they have to make tough decisions. What happened put some more money in their coffers. And I would argue in this case, it not only put general money, but it put a kind of a moral obligation that as much of that as possible should go towards teacher pay.
Yeah. But
there's other staff members. And in an individual district, if you're looking at we haven't got a serviceable quantity of school buses, or there's a air conditioning unit about to go out, or I don't know what, but it won't necessarily be the same in each district. I would not blame a school board looking at their individual case. They've been squeezed to the limit, and a little pile of extra money comes in. You have to. It is their job to prioritize. And if you don't like the way they did it, then unelect them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and the one thing I would say, I mean, again, from a political perspective and a public relations perspective, Governor Ducey has been very, very vocal about promising this 20% pay raise, this 9% pay raise this year. And that's not going to happen for every teacher in the state. And that's going to create some political backlash for Governor Ducey as we head into the quote-unquote campaign season.
My sense is that within some reasonable range, that teachers will understand that if you're in an individual district and you don't get they should get something, they should get most of it. If they get to see where that extra money is going, if they get the ancient textbooks get replaced or whatever it is in their district that is most pressing, if not every penny of that goes to teacher pay. But I think there's a moral obligation.
They're going to hold Ducey accountable, though.
The problem is that it wasn't enough money to solve all the problems,
exactly,
of which teacher pay is a
big one.
Is a significant part, and it was the part on which the public focused, because that's easily understood.
Right. And well, unfortunately, teachers were paying a lot of attention to, they were being promised 20%, which was an absurd promise. I mean, you can't do it. And I think teachers that were down there realized there's not enough money allocated to give teachers the promised increase. It's relying on, economic projections that are pretty shaky and, one hiccup in the economy. And they saw that this promised increase could go away very quickly. And, future years aren't guaranteed. I think the teachers that were down there know that, and I think that it was really disingenuous to promise this huge teacher salary increase when teachers know that there are a lot of needs.
I think what they recognized, and anybody who's looked at it recognizes, is that none of this is sustainable if your word number one is an adherence to the absolutely no tax increase whatsoever. And we have a system the voters participated in this, but kind of rigged the system whereby every year the legislature can cut taxes, but they can't increase them. They can't increase them because the voters imposed a two-thirds requirement, and you couldn't get two-thirds to endorse Mother's Day.
Yep.
Right? I mean,
exactly.
Because one party would be for it, one would be against. So we have an asymmetric system.
Exactly. Right.
You can cut for just a bare majority, and that's painless to do because cutting taxes is always easy, right?
Yep.
Until you have to go say, wait a minute, there isn't money there, and a lot of people are scared to death. If you disassociate the two, raising taxes is always a painful thing. It's always a politically costly thing. You're a tax raiser, but wait a minute. No, if you're a tax cutter, you just voted to make the teachers 49th or 50th.
Yeah.
Because that's why that's the case.
Yep. Well, and also one thing that I think the general public doesn't understand is a current legislature can't bind a future legislature to any particular policy or action. That's unconstitutional, which goes back to my earlier point. The best way to change education policy in this state is to elect new people. That's what I think the people that are behind the Red for Ed movement should be focused on, and I hope they get out and support people like Kelly.
Well, thank you. Well, and it is really the only solution. And my caucus was looking at new sources of revenue. Where can we find new revenues, and what tax credits or loopholes could we evaluate, see if they're still working? And we can't have that conversation. I talk to people on both sides of the aisle that are unwilling to even think about new revenues. They don't feel like we need more revenues. And I think if we're going to be sincere about increasing funding for education, we're going to have to evaluate new revenues.
But how do you get to, I mean, it's the two-thirds barrier. I could see getting 51%. I could see getting 51% with the current composition of the legislature, with broad public support. There are areas where, but 67% is an impenetrable barrier.
Well, you're right. Chad's right. We've got to elect different people until we get past that barrier. And I am extremely optimistic that this might be the year when we can have people think broader and think about the things that we need to invest in, all kinds of things, our infrastructure, education, healthcare. We've got a lot of needs, and we cannot run this state on a shoestring budget the way that we are.
Somehow I think communicatively we've got to tie. I mean, we would, in the abstract, it's rational to say everybody wants lower taxes, but
yeah,
of course. How much do you want in the way? And there's no freebie in there.
Like exactly.
Somebody say, well, cut waste. Well, one man's waste is another man's essential service.
Yep.
I mean, nobody's in favor of waste, but you know what? There's not a line item in there that says waste. If in most organizations you want to cut out big money, you got to start firing people, because that's where most of the budget goes. It goes to hire people to do things.
Yeah.
I serve in government with a lot of people who often say they don't like government. And here they are, in government. So I think we need some better solutions.
And some people, I don't like government and I want to run government in a way that will make people not like government.
Yeah, that's exactly.
It makes no sense.
Next week, we're going to talk about trade with Mexico. Does it impact Arizona? Two experts talking past the rhetoric. Some information on that. The week following over Memorial Day, Lawrence Krauss is back in the. We're doing a repeat of a earlier show with him, internationally noted scientist. And as I suggested, we will have right after Memorial Day two Republicans in here, the kind of moderate wing of the Republican Party, and we'll get their perspective on all of this in the Think Tank. Thank you, Kelly Butler, Chad Campbell. We'll see you next week.